My dudes, are you ready for Small Soldiers?
Are you scared? We're all scared. You'd have to be crazy not to be scared.
You're listening to The Millennial Rewatcher. Alrighty. First, before I jump into this bad boy, I was trying to say bad boy and I feel like it came out really weird, but also anyways,
what?
I basically had an asthma attack earlier today and all through the night. I can't get my lungs to clear up, and I just am saying this to you because I'm worried that my wheeziness might come through even as I'm speaking, because it does that sometimes when my asthma is really bad. So if you hear it, I'm sorry. There's not much else I can do about it aside from not recording at all, and that's not happening. So as I've already said, we're doing Small Soldiers. I hadn't intended to do this movie for my next episode originally. I was planning on doing Moulin Rouge. I watched it, bought it, watched it, all those things, but I don't... I need to re-examine how I feel about that movie, because I watched it and I think it just had a lot to do with the state of mind I was in. But when I had watched it, and I hadn't watched it in a very, very long time, because it's one of the really big attachment movies for me, I kind of hated it. It annoyed me. I still love the music, but as I was watching it, I was sitting there like, do I just like the music and not actually like the movie? I think that I was having a hard time facing one of the movies that are just harder for me to face in general, because I don't know, I've just been going through some shit. I don't know if I've... No, I have, because I probably mentioned it in my episode on Dante's Peak, because I talked about how Pierce Brosnan's character Harry, his very fatherly, nurturing demeanor was something that endeared me to that movie, because I didn't have a dad like that. Anyways, so I don't have a relationship with my dad. I chose to step away from that last year. And pretty recently, his sister, who I... Fuck her. If you're listening, I will tell this to her face. Fuck you. She is a horrible person. And I will say that publicly and tell you all about it. I'm not going to give you every single detail right here, right now. But she sent me a pretty horrible message regarding my choice to not speak to my dad. And it's a lot. My reasoning why I don't speak to my dad is a lot. And I don't really know if I want to get into that a ton on here. But the message she sent me just, it fucked with me really bad and put me in a bad space. And then I learned that my dad tried to show up unannounced at my house, which I've been waiting for him to do, because that's what he does. I've seen him do this to other people. It's been a habit of his as long as I've been on this fucking earth, where he will just show up to your house unannounced, expect it to be okay, and force a conversation with you, force an interaction. He can't respect boundaries. I don't know if I just didn't hear the door. Listen, I am the person that screens my door. I don't just screen my phone, I screen my door. If it's important, they'll keep a knocking. Anyways, so I don't know if I just happened to not be home. I'm home a lot, but maybe I just happened to not be home that day. But it really pissed me off. The anger I felt at that blatant disrespect and his inability to stay the fuck away. He's so bad for my brain space. Listen, I know I'm not being clear on why, but the thing is, he's a narcissist. He doesn't understand that he's abusive. I honestly, I'm not sure if he doesn't understand or chooses to not understand. There's so many fucking layers to it, but yeah, it's just, if I'm ever going to live a healthy-brained life, it has to be without him. It just has to be. So anyways, that's been fucking with me real bad, and I just couldn't do Moulin Rouge. I still think that I want to cover that movie and, I don't know, get into that with myself a little bit on here, but for right now, I needed something more lighthearted. I needed something that felt really, I knew was going to feel good. And that ended up being Small Soldiers. I adore this movie. It's hilarious. And Phil Hartman is in it. I've talked about Phil Hartman a bit before, just because I've done a couple of movies where he pops up. He was in So I Married an Axe Murderer. Oh God, I swear he was in something else that I've done on here. And now I'm blanking. Am I making that up? It was he at least had a cameo in So I Married an Axe Murderer. I don't know. But I also wasn't aware that Small Soldiers was the last movie he did, live action movie he did, before he died. As I was starting to research some, you know, facts for this movie, I found that and I was like, you know what? Why don't we talk about Phil for a little bit? It's gonna make me sad. His death was horribly tragic. There's something about him that I've just always felt very pulled to, besides him being hilarious. But there's just something about his person that, I don't know, as much as a stranger can on the other side of the internet or the world or the entertainment, you know, as the viewer can, I just feel a pull to this person. I did actually just order his biography, so I haven't read it yet, but I am excited to read that. Until recently, I don't think reading biographies was something I could face specifically for people that I have a huge endearment to. And again, I don't really have an explanation for that, but it just incites a panic attack within me. Pure and utter chaos in my brain space that actually makes me feel like I might be fried, unravel, and my head might pop off like one of the commando elites do in this movie. Oh, which will make more sense as we get into it if you haven't seen this movie. But first, we are going to talk a little bit about Phil Hartman.
You are correct, sir. Yes!
Let's talk about Phil Hartman. Phil Hartman was born Philip Edward Hartman. Hartman, you see it now on all of his credits and such with one N. He used to have two, but he dropped one of the N's when he got into his career a bit. He was born September 24th, 1948 in Brantford, Ontario, Canada. He's a Canadian. I'm sorry, I love Canada and the Canadians. I just like to say things weird. He was one of eight children of Doris Marguerite. I kind of love that. Doris Marguerite, how regal and almost like Hollywood 1950s does that feel to me? Anyways, and his dad, Rupert Lobig Hartman. The family moved to the United States when Phil was around 10, and he spent most of his childhood in Connecticut and Southern California. Phil originally studied graphic design at California State University, and he began to work part-time as a graphic artist. He would design cover albums for bands such as Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. But eventually, he transitioned to comedy after volunteering to go on stage during a performance by the iconic Groundlings troupe in Los Angeles. In a quote from Tracy Newman, a comedian and founding member of the Groundlings, she said, "I never saw an audience member come up with that kind of excitement and energy. It was like a hurricane hit the stage. And I mean that in a good way." After that, they invited Phil to join their traveling troupe. As he took classes with them in Los Angeles, he proved not just energetic, but a natural performer, a natural comedian, and a brilliant writer. He helped create, he helped create the Pee Wee Herman character with Paul Reubens and co-wrote the screenplay to its first movie, Pee Wee's Big Adventure. And okay, side note, I was never really a fan of Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Something about it just, I don't know. I'd have to watch it to figure it out, and I don't really want to, though. But it just wasn't for me. But I love that he was a part of that piece of pop culture. So Phil, he went on to spend 11 years with the Groundlings, performing characters like Chick Hazard, Private Eye.
"This is my favorite character. His name is Chick Hazard. He's a hard-boiled private investigator." "It was midnight when it happened. I was parked in front of Four Fingers of Bourbon at the Swanee Club on La Brea Avenue. Most ex-flyboys were making babies and buying refrigerators. But in the aftermath of my POW experience, I'd rekindled a relationship with two old pals, Jack Daniels and Jim Beam. My life was rapidly going down the porcelain convenience. I could barely afford cigarettes, whiskey, and food. Looked like the food was going to have to go. I had two things in common with the colored patrons of the Swanee Club. We all loved Nat King Cole. And we were all fed up with white people."
Hazard became his signature character, one he used to his advantage, and the troops' advantage, during the 1984 Los Angeles Olympics when the Groundlings performed Olympic Trials, a Chick Hazard mystery. It was the first of all Olympic-related local theater events to sell out for those Olympic Games. I love the Olympics, so I kind of love a little bit of a crossover Olympic fact with anything theater, film, pop culture, comedy. Just, you know, gets me all excited. Okay, in 1986, Phil joined the cast of none other than Saturday Night Live, SNL. And he was a staple on the show for 8 seasons, one of the longest running people on the show. That has been beat now, and I'm so sorry I'm forgetting who has that record, but he, you know, held the reigning title of longest person on said show for quite some time, 8 whole seasons. He was an instant success there with characters like the unfrozen caveman lawyer.
"I'm just a caveman. I fell in some ice and later got thawed out by some of your scientists.
Your world frightens and confuses me.
His impressions of Ronald Reagan.
Well, all I can say is I didn't know. And well, we're trying to find out what happened because none of us know.
Well, thank you, Mr. President.
Well, I hope I've answered your questions as best I could, given the very little that I know. Goodbye and God bless you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much.
Bill Clinton.
All right, boys. Let's stop in here for a second. I'm a little parched from the jog.
Sir, we've only been jogging for 3 blocks. Besides, Mrs. Clinton asked us not to let you into any more fast food places.
Well, I just want to mingle with the American people, talk with some real folks, maybe get a Diet Coke or something.
All right, fine. But please, don't tell Mrs. Clinton.
Jim, let me tell you something. There's going to be a whole bunch of things we don't tell Mrs. Clinton. Fast food is the least of our worries, okay, buddy?
Barbara Bush.
Well, you know, I just don't get it. With that big head and that little body, he looks like a taffy apple.
Taffy apple.
I'll leave that sort of name-calling to the Republicans.
Okay. He's an iceman.
Well, George Bush is a whip. Ladies.
Well, Mr. Little Zorba the Greek can't keep his grubby little hands off you in public.
Oh, well, go soak ladies, your feet, Barbara.
Ladies,
they're swelling.
Please, please. You're tarnishing the pageant. We've got Bess Meyerson in court. We don't need this kind of behavior. Oh, and now we're out of time.
And Ed McMahon. Phil, he held Saturday Night Live. What? He held Saturday Night Live. What? He held Saturday Night Live together during his 8-year reign. And it earned him the nickname of the glue while on the show. He was also known for his work on commercials and cartoons. He voiced Troy McClure and Lionel Hutz, as well as some other minor characters on The Simpsons. And by the time he left SNL in 94, he'd won an Emmy, I believe a daytime Emmy, as a writer, and been nominated for another as a performer. In 1995, he was cast in the critically acclaimed NBC show News Radio as arrogant radio host Bill McNeil. Okay, some other of his roles I wanted to note. This is not all of his collection of things he's been in. I'm fumbling for the correct way to say that, but here we go. So he was in House Guest in 1995, Greedy in 94, Jingle All the Way, which I will be covering that movie. I don't think I'm going to do too many Christmas movies. Just, I don't know, I'm just not going to. I might change my mind on that, but Jingle All the Way. Oh, I fucking love that movie. Sergeant Bilko, Coneheads, Spaceballs, The Brave Little Toaster, The Pagemaster, The Three Amigos, So I Married an Axe Murderer, and then Kiki's Delivery Service. He never really got to play a leading role. He was kind of always a side character. And I don't know if that's something that he strived for, was to land a leading role. But for me, when Phil Hartman is in a movie, he steals a bit of the spotlight in a very good way, at least in my world. So even though he never got to play a leading role, technically he was a side character, for lack of better phrasing, he was still a leading man to me. There's something about him that was magnetic, and your eye pulled to him, and his humor and the way he delivered things and his cadence. And I don't know, to me, he just held his own. There's more to him than just the comedian. And I mean, for fuck's sake, he started out as a graphic designer and life was like, excuse you, sorry, we need to change this because you're on the wrong path. This is not your lot in life. Let's rewind, be kind, and try again. And he did. And oh God, I could say so much about him. I'm really excited to read his book. I probably will be devastated by some parts, I'm sure. God, especially because, all right, I'm not going into too much detail here. I'm not doing some like heavily researched segment on Phil Hartman because, you know, we got a whole ass movie to recap too. I should have noted that before I started, but I'm kind of getting at some of the major facts here and things that I wanted to point out. But there's more to Phil than this, and we're gonna kind of see that a little bit as I now segue in the most awkward way possible into his personal life. So Phil was married for a brief time between 1970 and 1972, and then again from 1982 to 1985. His charisma on stage didn't always translate to an energetic, gregarious personal personality off stage and in his personal life. Phil was known for being kind of low-key and, according to some, sometimes to a fault. Okay, so I know I'm probably jumping a little bit to conclusions, but when a person puts that much energy, especially big comedic energy, into their work, and then you hear that he could be, I mean, I from what I was reading, he said like he was almost a little bit of a recluse, but more of just like an introvert. But it also kind of was coming off in a way that he needed that time to like recoup his mental space and his, I don't know, the energy he had to give to all of these other big things in his life, including people. I wonder if there was some sort of mental health stuff going on there, maybe depression, anxiety, I don't know. Maybe he's neurodivergent. But when I was reading about him and reading those specific things, how bright he was on stage, but how he had such a harder time in his personal life and would become very reclusive and quiet and need to close himself off from the people around him, I'm like, well, that sounds like a person who could potentially be struggling with mental health or have some sort of neurodivergence. Or maybe that's just his personality. You know, I could be totally off base with this, but it was kind of a I don't want to say habit, but I can't think of another word for it, but like a habit of his to back off from being able to participate in the everyday lives of other people in his life. And that, I mean, fuck, man, there's so many things we could say about that, and it's all conjecture. I don't have any proof of that. I get very I'm passionate about it, as we can tell. I do this all the time. Mike Rogers, Phil's biographer, stated that, quote, his relationships would always start out very intensely, intense emotionality, sexuality, and then they would inevitably peter out. I mean, with Phil, he was always on the hunt for the new, the fresh. He had an artist's eye for beauty. I have so many things I could say about that, but again, it's all conjecture and I probably shouldn't. So Phil met his third wife, Bryn Omdale, not too long after splitting from his second wife, Lisa Jarvis. Bryn was an actress, but she struggled within the entertainment industry and developed an addiction to cocaine. However, she was in recovery and sober when she was set up on a blind date with Phil in 1986. The pair were married a year later, and Phil and Bryn went on to have two children, Sean and Bergen. I think I'm saying Bergen right. I'm really sorry if I'm not. God damn, I'm always apologizing for my mispronunciation of shit. Based on what Phil told family and friends, Phil had never been happier than he was in the mid-90s. Still, Bryn's lack of success alongside Phil's success and kind of reclusive personality, they caused problems. Phil would often end their fights by withdrawing and going to sleep. Mm-hmm. Again, that could be a very neurodivergent thing to do. I'm sorry, but am I? Or he just was tired. Anyways, he also stated that at times, Bryn would become so hostile that he had to restrain her to get her to stop. Listen, that would exhaust the best of us, so fucking hell. Bryn started to drink a lot more, and she started using cocaine again. By May 1998, she had been in and out of rehab, just continuing to struggle with addiction. On the evening of May 27th, 1998, after she returned home from eating dinner with a friend, her and Phil got into a fight. The friend that she went to dinner with said that she had had two drinks and didn't seem upset, but when she got home with Phil, something imploded and they had a big old fight. The couple had a pair of guns, a small collection that Bryn began when they moved back to LA from New York City. And at around 2 a.m., I forgot to say this before, but trigger warning for murder and suicide. So this is a murder-suicide situation. At around 2 a.m., she removed a .38 Smith & Wesson from their metal lockbox in the closet and shot Phil in the head and chest as he slept in bed. He died instantly. An hour later, Bryn called her friend Ron Douglas. She told Ron that Phil was gone for the evening and had left a note saying he'd be back later. And Ron just told her to go back to sleep, but she didn't. Instead, Bryn showed up at Ron's door about 20 minutes later. He was angry but concerned and knew better than to try her temper. So he invited her inside, where she kind of just collapsed on the living room floor. He was afraid she'd overdose, so he woke her up. And after that, she ran straight to the bathroom where she puked over and over. Bryn repeatedly told him that she'd killed Phil, but even when she showed him the murder weapon, my God, he still didn't believe her. Eventually, she sobered up enough to drive home, but she did insist that Ron follow her home. On the way, she called and confessed to her friend Judy, who took this confession much more seriously and immediately raced over to their house, to Phil and Bryn's house. With the authorities on their way, Bryn ended up locking herself in the bedroom. She sat next to Phil's body and called her sister. When the cops showed up, banging on the door, Bryn hung up and took her own life. And that is the tragic death of Phil Hartman. He was 49, I believe, when he was killed. Their two kids were home. Oh, the eldest was 9. I think the youngest was 7. So I know that's a really somber note. And again, I didn't get into crazy detail about his life. There will be some more links to things if you want to listen more about him. I will include links to some of his iconic SNL sketches, not sketches, skits, and a tribute episode. There's a podcast that I like. I don't listen to it all the time, but Dana Carvey and David Spade, Fly on the Wall, they have an episode called Remembering Phil Hartman that I'm going to link in the show notes as well if you would like to listen to that. And they worked with him on SNL. They were friends, so they have, you know, much more insight than obviously I do, a stranger. On that note, why don't we jump into Small Soldiers? Out in 1998. It's directed by Joe Dante, written by Gavin Scott, Adam Rifkin, Ted Elliott, and Terry Rossio. It was produced by Michael Fennell and Colin Wilson. Our cast, Fist. We have Kirsten Dunst, who plays Christy Fimple. Yes, that is her last name in this movie. Fimple. Sounds like pimple or dimple. Gregory Smith, who was my adolescent crush. Well, I guess one of my adolescent crushes. Oh, I loved that guy. He plays Allan Abernathy. Joe Moore plays Larry Benson. Phil Hartman plays Phil Fimple, so Christy's dad. As I was taking my notes for this, I kept on writing and saying in my head, Kirsty, and then Kirsten, and then Christy. So if I fuck that up as we're talking about this, my apologies ahead of time. Kevin Dunn plays Stuart Abernathy, which is such a treat. Dennis Leary plays Gil Mars. Oh, I wanted to say, Jay Moore, he was on SNL with Phil Hartman. Anne Magnuson plays Irene Abernathy. David Cross plays Irwin Wayfair. I kind of adore him. Wendy Shaw plays Marion Fimple. Jacob Smith plays Timmy Fimple. I can't get over that fucking last name. And Dick Miller plays Joe. If you're not familiar, again, if you're not familiar with this movie, that the cast will make more sense as I talk about the film. But anyways, those are our people. Those are our players for now.
So remember, you are the best of the best of the few and the proud.
We gotta go over the Gorgonites and the Commando Elite real quick, so I'm gonna start with the Gorgonites. You don't have to pick sides, but if you're on a side of toys in this movie, I'm on the Gorgonite side, okay? I love them so much. Anyways, Frank Langella plays Archer. He's kind of head of the Gorgonites. Christopher Guest plays Slam Fist. Michael McKean plays Insaniac, later known as Freakenstein. He gets smashed and then reassembled. Harry Shearer plays Punch It, and Jim Cummings plays Ocula. The Commandos. Listen, I know I just said I'm Team Gorgonite. If we're choosing teams, you don't have to, but it sounds fun. Anyways, Tommy Lee Jones plays Major Chip Hazard.
Fine, ladies, now listen, and listen good. Our mission, destroy the Gorgonite enemy, defeat him.
Yes, sir.
There will be no mercy.
Search the area and secure New Orleans.
Tommy Lee Jones as Major Chip Hazard is one of the best things ever. He's fantastic. He makes this movie all the better. George Kennedy plays Brick Bazooka. Jim Brown plays Butch Meathook. Ernest Borgnine, plays Kip Killigan. Clint Walker plays Nick Nitro. Bruce Dern plays Link Static. The names are pretty killer, okay? I do enjoy a good name. We see these dolls in the movie. They're called Gwendy dolls. They're kind of a inspired hybrid of Barbie dolls and... Oh, God, there was... What's the other doll? Now I can't even find that note. So anyways, we see them come to life by way of the Commando Elite's little doll lab Frankenstein thing that they rig up. And Sarah Michelle Gellar and Christina Ricci play the voices of the Gwendy dolls. I did find this fact fun, so I just wanted to note, excluding Jones and Dern, the Commando Elite are voiced by cast members from the 1967 film The Dirty Dozen.
Major, I don't want to do this. Oh, come on, Posey, just stick it right here. I mean, it won't hurt. Come on.
I don't want to hurt you.
You're not going to hurt me. I'm going to hurt you.
that's kind of fun. It's like they almost got back together in a way. Dern replaced the Dirty Dozen actor Richard Jackall, who died before shooting began. So RIP, my dude. And then excluding Langella and Cummings, the Gorgonites are voiced by cast members from the 1984 film, This is Spinal Tap.
I do not for one think that the problem was that the band was down. I think that the problem may have been that there was a Stonehenge monument on the stage that was in danger of being crushed by a dwarf.
I'm obsessed. Okay. Small Soldiers, it opens with a Globotech ad. Then a shot of Heartland Play Systems merging with Globotech. And our two main tech guys, Erwin and Larry, stressing over the merger meeting. Erwin is worried Globotech will only care about profits. They do. So does Larry. Larry is just excited that this whole thing is happening. He's ecstatic. Mr. Mars, played by Dennis Leary, shows up. And he says that he kept Erwin and Larry on because they created these very successful belch dolls. Essentially, they're just cool-ass toys that burp.
It brought to my attention that you two are responsible for this.
Yes, sir. That's Fletchu. He's part of the Belch Brigade.
Yeah, actually, the whole line was Erwin's idea.
So there's that. So Mars kept them on to make him more money. Erwin starts his Gorgonite speech. I kind of adore him and how he stumbles and fumbles because same, big same.
Gorgonite, sir. And hi, how are you today?
I'm late.
All right. Here's, I drew up some pictures. That's a picture you can have. There's a, all right, these are Gorgonites, sir, and this one, this is Archer. He's the grand noble leader of them. Okay, and Troglodon, the navigator who navigates. Okay, well, these are monsters who come from the land of Gorgon, and they come to our world, and they're lost, and now in order to get back to Gorgon, they have to find out as much stuff about our world as possible, and this way the kids can learn and do research and can
Excuse
find
me,
out about...
Did you say learn?
Learn, yeah.
Next.
He's the creative guy. He's like all creative brain. He's not the business guy, you know? And it doesn't go well. As soon as he says something about kids learning, Mars is out, bitch. So Larry jumps in with the Commando Elites.
The future is here. A new age has dawned. For action. Most awesome high-tech fighting force is ready to battle for the next millennium.
Chip Hazard, reporting for duty.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Can they really do that?
Do what?
The thing where he punches his way out of the box.
No.
I think so.
Okay, so Mars wants the dolls to be fully functional the way they are in these big commercials, you know, like the big overdone commercials. He even says where they're climbing Mount Everest and he wants them to actually talk and interact for reals. Realistic, but plastic and purchasable. That's where the Globotech part comes in. It gives them access to technology that can make the dolls come to life. So Mars greenlights the Commandos, but he also wants the Gorgonites to be made alongside them as their mortal enemy. So they're sold as separately, but it's also a way to get you to spend more fucking money. Hey, you got to get this one doll, but this is also its mortal enemy. They're going to interact with one another. So you better buy them both. Larry loves this. Erwin is stressed. He loves his Gorgonites. He doesn't really like this idea, but he's being run over and railroaded in this moment. So yeah, the Commandos are going to be programmed to defeat the Gorgonites. It's their whole doll life mission. Mars also wants them done and ready to put into stores and sell in 3 months. So Larry turns to the Globotech database to find the X-1000. A military-grade ship to make the Commandos turn into plastic meathead killing machines, and the Gorgonites docile plastic all-monster replicas. Replicas? Okay. Replicas that just want to learn and chill. Okay, well, the Gorgonites are badass, but the Commandos are bullshit. Again, I love the Gorgonites. And they're not programmed to fight, so I don't see a problem with them. I did not register this at first, but as I was editing, I had to stop myself and go back and be like, if you don't fucking include this point, Megan, you're a loser. I would be remiss to not mention this. Okay, so after Dennis Leary, Mr. Mars, leaves. His assistant goes to give Gustav, God, goes to give Larry and Erwin the passwords to the system. And she hands them these cards and she goes, memorize them. Don't say them out loud. Okay, well, Erwin still says his out loud. And he says,
mine's Gizmo.
I said secret.
Gizmo. He says it's Gizmo. If you don't know the reference, Gizmo is the gremlin, like our main gremlin from the movie Gremlins. And Joe Dante, the director of this film, directed Gremlins. I kind of love that he had to throw that little Easter egg in here. It just tickles me. Now we meet the love of my kid life, Gregory Smith. I mean, Alan Abernathy. As he bikes through the orange circle, I know it when I see it. Okay, I know this is the orange circle. They don't say so, obviously. But anyways, to his dad's toy shop. His dad is going out of town for a seminar and has left Alan in charge. A big deal we'll learn here soon because Alan here has a kid criminal past. His dad's toy shop is more of an old school toy store that, you know, is not of the times in the movie. And I guess now as well, because it's like puzzles and things you have to build. And, you know, it isn't just something with a chip in it that works for you when you put a fucking battery in it. So the store isn't doing well, unfortunately. A shipment is being dropped off and we meet Joe.
Hey, Alan. How's the world treating you?
You Joe look how in my day.
Jeez, oh, kid, tough break.
New truck?
New owner, see? Yeah. Pretty soon, everything in the world is going to be owned by one giant corporation. Yeah, it's goodbye, microbreweries. So, where's your dad? I got his order here.
He's going out of town tonight to some seminar.
Wait a second. He left you in charge?
Hey, I was as surprised as you.
Joe is the truck driver for Heartland Play Toys. So he's dropping off a shipment of whatever to Alan's dad's toy shop. We like Joe, okay? He's a good one. As Alan is catching up with Joe and helping him unload their toy shipment, they notice some boxes that say Commando Elite and Gorgonites and naturally decide to check them out. So they bring him inside and open him up in the back room.
Ten.
Major Chip Hazard, reporting for duty, sir.
Wow, voice activated. Not bad.
Yeah, they move, they talk. They got a built-in two-way radio. Buy a second commando and communicate with a friend.
Halt, who goes there?
Greetings, I am Archer, emissary of the Gorgonites.
Polite for a monster.
I love that Joe was just like, fuck yeah, let's open these up real quick. I can just tape them shut again. No big. Him and Alan's curiosity is on the same level, and I'm kind of here for it. After this, Alan comes up with an idea to make his dad's failing toy shop bring in some kiosh and proposes his harebrained idea to Joe.
Hey, Joe, you think you could, like, front me a set of these?
What?
You know, just sort of lend them to me. You got plenty in the truck.
Yeah. That's Toy World's inventory for the month. This store is paid for. I don't want to get my ticket pulled.
I'll pay you back after I sell them.
Yeah, what about your dad's policy? No war toys.
Don't worry about my dad. By the time he gets back, they'll all be sold. And this place will have made a little money for once.
Joe, he agrees. My dude, you're doing a lot for this kid. Okay, and I guess also a lot for his dad, because this be dumb. But Joe empathizes with him, and he genuinely wants to help out. So he is taking a big ass fucking risk here, one that I don't know if I would make, because it's his job, it's his livelihood, you know? But again, we like Joe. In front of the store, Alan sees his crush, Christy, heading into the toy store with her kid brother, who he is an annoying little shit, all right? I'm sorry, but I'm not. I know it's his character. Anyways, Alan sees them getting ready to head in. He gets all nervous. He checks his breath for why. For why? You're not dating. How close do you think you're going to get, my dude? I know it's just like a nervous tick thing. Probably did the same thing when I was a kid. Like, just in case. You never know. Maybe she would want to make out with him. But anyways, they flirt while her annoying brother wanders around looking for what he wants for his birthday. And he wanders into the back room just like a kid who hasn't been given a boundary a day in his life would. And he sees Commander Chip Hazard and Archer, leader of the Gorgonites, alive as fuck. They were still out of their boxes. Alan hadn't put them away yet. He hasn't even started setting up the display yet. Joe had just left. So anyways, little Timmy here, he wants one. Archer and Chip disappeared during this interaction of Timmy running from the back room being like, I want this toy. like, meow, 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 come look. And then run into the back room to look. Now they're gone. So Christy's like, hey, can you just hold them till tomorrow when you find them, blah, blah, blah. And then they leave. Alan finds the dolls and gets them set up. And that's when he notices his dad left his airline ticket on a random shelf at the shop. So he races off to get it to him in time. And now we meet his parents.
Hey, suitcase, briefcase, keys. Where are my keys?
Right where you left them.
Oh, and where did I leave them? Oh, what is the matter with me? What else?
Stuart, please try to relax. Yeah. Now, remember why we moved here? To get away from the stress? To eliminate the stress? To exhale the stress.
Okay, next door. Well, the house kind of like alongside his house. You'd have to walk around the block to get to their front door. But their backyards, they share a fence a little bit. I hope that makes sense. Jesus Christ. So next door, Christy and her little shit brother arrive home.
Hey, Dad.
See the satellite.
Hi, sweetie.
What's up?
I out here was just telling me that the angle of the Earth's tilt on its axis relative to the geocentric orbit of the transmission satellite restricts the placement for optimum reception. Yeah. In other words, this tree is in the way.
Right. Exactly.
No problemo.
Phil Hartman, Phil Fimple in this movie. I do kind of love that his name in the movie, his character's name is Phil, just like, you know, his name in real life. I don't know. There's something about it. I just feels like it's actually just him. I love seeing his face pop up in a movie. I truly do. And again, that name, Phil Fimple. There's that.
Guy says the tree's gotta go. You don't mind, do you?
Yes, I mind.
What?
I said, yes, I mind. What the hell are you doing, Phil? This is my tree.
Don't worry. Happy to do the work. What are good neighbors for? You see the dish? She's a beauty, huh?
No. This tree is beautiful. That dish is just one more piece of techno crap to go along with the rest of your stockpile of techno crap. And you're already pulling so much juice, you got us all living in a cancer node.
You know, there's never been any conclusive data proving a link between...
Why don't you just give me that saw for a minute, Phil? Come on.
Stuart, come on. Airplane now, vendetta later.
I'll check the zoning laws, but I think they'll prove me in the right here.
Stuart doesn't have time for Phil's bullshit, so he heads off to the airport in his convertible VW Bug. I want this VW. I'm not even like a big VW Bug fan, but I like this one. Alan heads up to his room with... It has its own staircase, but no door? It appears, unless we just don't ever see that the door part of it, but the fuck?
These rooms did have doors, didn't they?
It's a cool-ass room. It's almost like an attic room, but it's not, so it's almost like a loft at the same time, but how do people... It's like people who sleep with their bedroom doors open. I don't understand. I know it's not my experience, but, like, I don't understand that. I would constantly feel like there's someone in the doorway, and I would never fall asleep. I also got a thing about the closet monster. I think that's where monsters live if they're real. I also really, really believe that there was something under my bed. And when I was a kid, God, I haven't done this in a long time, but even in my early adult life, I would do this sometimes. When I get up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, I would take like as much of a leap as I could without being super ridiculous. So if anything was under the bed, it couldn't reach out and like stab me or grab me. I feel like that's a bit of an uncovered memory. I just remember that in this moment. My God. So anyways, Alan goes up to his room and he discovers Archer in his backpack. Archer is fucking hilarious. And I love him.
How the heck did you get in here? What was it? Halt, who goes there?
Greetings. I am Archer, emissary of the Gorgonites.
Sure you are.
Beware, there will be no mercy.
Is that so?
Beware, there will be no mercy.
Yeah, well, I'll be real careful. Thanks for the advice.
Greetings. I am Archer, emissary of the Gorgonites. What is your name?
I'm Alan. Now shut up. Gotta do my homework.
Greetings, Alan. Now shut up.
What did you say? You just said my name, didn't you? Didn't you?
Back at the toy shop, the commando elites break out their boxes. And we officially meet the commando. We've got Brick Bazooka.
Artillery, ready to go full bore, sir!
Save it for the enemy.
Butch Meathook.
Sniper, lethal from any distance, sir.
Good to have you aboard.
Kip Killigan.
Covert insurgent, sharp as a razor. Sir,
let me see that weapon. Standard issue is insufficient.
Nick Nitro.
Demolition is my mission.
Served with your father. He's a good man.
Link Static.
Communications awaiting dispatch of orders, sir.
Double up on your rations, Sparky. Our mission, destroy the Gorgonite enemy, defeat him.
Yes, sir.
There will be no mercy.
Search the area and secure new arms.
So Alan fell asleep doing his homework. So Archer is like, all right, you know, I'm bored. Let me check out this computer thing and learn like I'd be programmed to do. And also maybe find Gorgon. So that's the Gorgonites' mission, is to find Gorgon and find their way home. That's kind of like their lot in their doll life. I so would have been BFFs with the Gorgonites. You know, bitch, I'll be their Christopher Robin. Anyways, Alan wakes up and is like, yo, so what you up to? And they kind of start chatting again. At the toy shop, the commandos go after the Gorgonites. And it kind of seems like they've been totally obliterated. Archer and Alan find the mess the next morning. As you can imagine, Alan is big stressed. Christy shows up to buy that bitch Chip Hazard for her bitch ass little brother. And we learn more about Alan's past.
Who did all this? Are you pulling some kind of insurance scam?
I swear, I did one thing wrong, that's it. And I'm branded for life.
So it is true. I heard your parents had to move here because you got kicked out of 10 different schools.
I did not.
No?
It was two.
Only two?
Also, so Alan, in this moment, he says he's an X-Files guy, and my kid self definitely swooned for that shit, okay?
I'm Mormon. X-Files kind of guy myself.
The truth is out there, Alan.
Christy helps him clean everything up, and just as they're finishing up, Stuart shows up. So I don't know if I just missed something in the beginning of the movie, or do I detect a plot hole here? Because it seemed like Stu was going to be gone all weekend, and Alan definitely needed more than one night to sell these dolls, because if Stuart is already back, how was he ever going to have any time to sell these dolls before his dad came back, you know? So the fuck? Alan kind of gets in trouble here because Stuart can just tell like something's off, and he goes over to this big wooden replica, toy replica of a ship. I'm not calling it. I'm using the right words here, so hopefully you're getting what I'm trying to put down. Alan and Christy had just been finishing putting it back together because it was a little bit fucked up. It looks brand fucking new, though, but Stuart, he still can sniff some bullshit in the air. So Alan's kind of in trouble here. Christy leaves. Alan does follow her outside for a moment, where Christy's boyfriend pulls up on his Vespa? Or is it actually a motorcycle? I'm misremembering now, and I swear to God, it's like some sort of fucking Vespa, which is fine, but he's supposed to be like hardcore bad guy, older guy, and he's just not. Christy's boyfriend dude is there to pick her up. Alan is big bummed, and Christy zooms off with this shit face. Inside, Stuart finds all of his tools are gone, and he thinks Alan took them. Bitch, it was definitely the commandos. The commandos are on the hunt. So they only got one Gorgonite, the guy who is kind of renamed Freakenstein because I almost called them the Gorgonzolas, which Phil does reference the Gorgonites as the Gorgonzolas at one point later in the film. So that's probably why I just did that in my head. But anyways, yeah, the Gorgonites, they did reassemble Freakenstein. I'm forgetting his OG name. But for now, that they think that he's donezo, unfortunately. The commandos are tracking Alan to get Archer. And they also were like, Alan has aligned himself with Gorgonite scum. So now he is the enemy as well. As rel? Fuck. As well.
Rick Bazooka, front and center.
Sir.
Prepare for assault, Sergeant. Don't fire till you see the whites of his eyes.
Prepare to fire the bazooka. Fire!
Rick Bazooka goes down. He done fucked up by trying to climb Alan's in-motion bike, dumbass.
Rick Bazooka reporting. Target escape en route to enemy stronghold. Sir, I'm pretty messed up, sir.
Hold on, son. We're on our way.
Back at home, Alan calls customer service at Heartland Toys.
May I help you? Yes, I'm having some trouble with one of your...
What is the name of the toy? And what is the nature of the problem?
The toys are the Gorgonites.
There are no more Gorgonites.
Shh. And the Commando Elite.
The Commando Elite are the mortal enemy of the Gorgonites.
The Commando Elite wrecked my dad's store and destroyed the Gorgonites.
The Commando Elite are designed to fight the Gorgonites.
They didn't fight them, they destroyed them, and now they're gone.
I'm sorry, but Heartland Play Systems does not replace lost toys.
I love that he leaves a voicemail.
Look, is there a machine I can talk to? Just transfer me to a machine.
Hi. Have a nice day, ma'am.
I'm not a ma'am.
Please state the name of your toy and the nature of your problem.
He's big stressed. He's like, what the actual fuck am I going to do? He doesn't know where the commandos are. He's got Archer toting along in his backpack, like, must find Gorgonites. And he's just a kid. Anyways, at Globotech, they are having some sort of launch party meeting. Erwin comes in to get Larry and plays him Alan's voicemail.
Oh, come on. How could they be dangerous? Everything on them are standard. The design is standard. The materials are standard. The mechanicals are standard. Even the... Oh.
What's O?
What?
No, what's O? You just said O.
No, I said O.
Oh, like, that's interesting, or O, like, we're screwed?
No, look, I mean, you know, hey, whoa, O. All right, look, forget the O, all right? I'm going to run down to legal and get the ball rolling on the countersuit,
okay? The chips.
Erwin is super concerned, and he's asking Larry if they have anything to be worried about. Larry tries to deflect. He's like, nah, bitch, it's fine. But Erwin, he's pretty persistent, and eventually he's like, it's the chips, isn't it? And so this is when Erwin learns the truth about the chips in the toys.
They were designed for the Department of Defense. You put munitions chips in toys?
I love that line. You put munitions chips in toys? Yeah, Larry did. Larry's a dick. Dick dumbass. That would be his commando name. Back at Alan's house, which is definitely on the Paramount lot. I just had to note that because I love when I recognize, I'm like, oh, this be the Paramount lot. I just enjoy it. The commandos have gotten inside and they capture Archer. It's like the middle of the night right now, kind of. They try to put him down a fucking garbage disposal.
Emissary of the Gorgonites, where are you?
Beware, there will be no mercy.
We're lost. We need to find our homeland.
Our homeland. We're in trouble. Please fight us.
You gotta help us find Goron.
Goron? It's Gorgon, moron. Oh, I hope he comes. We're no match for the awesome commandos.
Yeah, everything else is just a toy.
Kitty, kitty.
Grab him! Get him down! String him up!
I don't like when they actually are capturing and harming the Gorgonites, because the Gorgonites are just kind of like, we don't fight. I'm not programmed to fight you. So like, this is just kind of happening. And they're little doll faces. It makes me sad. Luckily, Alan wakes up since he has no fucking door and the staircase to his room is off the kitchen. So yeah, he's just hearing everything. So he saves Archer and he ends up putting one of the commandos down the disposal instead and delegging him.
Surrender, Gorgonite ally. Just met your match.
Oh, yeah?
Surrender or die!
Alan, what the hell is going on here?
His parents wake up from all this commotion and come a-rushing in, and the truth spills out. Alan is trying to explain that the toys are weapons of war, essentially, but they don't believe him. I mean, would you? If your kid was telling you this story, I'd be like, we're going to the doctor tomorrow. Or can you show me proof? I need to see it from it. And that's just, you know. Anyways, so his mom asks him if he's on crank. Alan's mom, we don't need to immediately just jump to drugs. Okay. Alan's mom. She does turn out to be a badass. So I just had a moment with her. It's okay now. Turns out the rest of the Gorgonites, they weren't destroyed like Alan and Archer thought. Archer may have just been nearly disposed, but he learned that the commandos were not successful like they thought. The commandos have set up camp in Phil's garage, and they are toy salivating over all the hardware, as they put it.
Commando Elite, fall in!
Sir! Yes, sir!
We have met the enemy. He is big. He is fast. He has allied himself with the Gorgonite scum. The rules of engagement have changed. Private Static!
Damn. Woohoo. Wow.
This place is a gold mine.
Holy smokes, look at all this hardware. Technological superiority.
Dibs on the chainsaw.
Alan and Archer go looking for the hiding Gorgonites, and they find them in the dumpster behind the toy shop.
This is so gross. Hello, is anybody in there? Hey.
Akula.
What was that?
It's the Gorgonites. Akula. Punch it. Ugh. Scratch it.
Hey, it's great to be back. But seriously, folks, what a dump. Hey!
Ciniac.
Okay, hey, what are you, a kid or an oil painting? No, seriously, folks. They got me sharing a dressing room with Bloody Fruit.
Don't worry, Archer. We was hiding.
Slam fist. Frog McCaw?
Oh. We fixed him.
We tried to fix him.
Hey, my dad's radio.
Some assembly required.
Slamfist is so cute. I really wish I had one of him. And I would like him to also still be able to talk, but not to the point where I need to like tell him to shut up. So like if he could just read my mood, that would be great. Anyways, Larry and Irwin learn more about the X-1000 chip by going to the source. The guy who made it and heads the project. Turns out Chip guy, Ralph is his name, has a never-ending hard-on for this chip that he's made. Dude's real passionate about it.
The X-1000 is a masterpiece. Imagine a microchip, sophisticated enough to control the guidance systems of ballistic missiles. Imagine it can be used to instantly upgrade any system that it's plugged into, like a smart drug for machines. Then, imagine it can learn.
What are you talking about? Artificial intelligence?
No, actual intelligence. It's no wonder those Philistines, the Pentagon, couldn't appreciate it. One little flaw and they scrap the whole project.
Aha, so there is a flaw in the chips.
Well, they're a little bit sensitive to EMP.
EMP? Electromagnetic pulse?
Yeah, you know, the kind generated by the detonation of a nuclear device.
So Alan takes all of the Gorgonites home, and they're having a good old ruckus of a time when Christy calls. He ends up kind of trying to ask her out, you know, hormonal teenage priorities, but she says she only dates older guys.
So Alan, what do you think? Boxes or breeze?
Those off your head.
But seriously.
Hey, what's going on?
Actually, allergic to plant.
Nothing.
Just
so, listen, I was thinking maybe we should celebrate sometime. You know, go to a movie or something.
Alan, I only date older guys. It's nothing personal.
No, you don't. Because, I mean, depending on how much older you're talking about, that's illegal, Christy. And stop. We're not doing this. Anyways, it turns out the commandos had tapped Alan's phone line and were listening in. And now they're going to use Christy as bait to get to Alan. And then...
Gorgonite scum!
So now they propose this plan to Chip Bitch Ass Hazard.
Transmission intercepted, sir. Gorgonites are alive and bivouacked at the enemy's stronghold.
And the enemy has revealed an age-old weakness.
I'm sure he'd be willing to give it all up for you. I know. I would.
Put yourself in for a commendation.
An age-old weakness, he says. We will exploit it. Bitch. Back with Phil. Phil Hartman as Phil Fimple. He's obsessing over his TV while the commandos drug Phil's wife, her gin and tonic with sleeping pills. They both passed the fuck out. I guess Phil didn't need any lulling to find a comatose state because he didn't have a drink and you don't see any drink he would have had being drugged like his wife's was. They put 3 sleeping pills in her gin and tonic. That's fucked up. Don't do that. So the commandos find Christie's collection of Wendy dolls and they lose their disgusting plastic nuts over them.
Look, sir. Bombshell, sir. Fully posable. Hello, darling. Sweet stuff.
R&R, sir?
Request a 3-day pass, sir.
Denied. Gentlemen, this is the new army. Those are reinforcements. Bring me the head of Nick Nitro. Move!
I hate it. I know it's a quick bit, so I'm not going to harp. It's kind of some boys will be boy shit, and I don't like it. So anyways, they build a little mad scientist lab and do some of their own Frankensteining.
It's alive! It's alive!
Hi there! Cannon fodder Gwendy reporting for duty, sir.
Carry on, soldier.
Okay, I guess I am harping a little bit because the dolls after said Frankensteining, they're all just wearing bikinis with a camo print on them. Why the fuck do the dolls have to be in just fucking bikinis? I hate this shit. We dress men like they're going to war on a football field, but women? Strip them. Dolls in a movie? Strip them. This is a display of how women are constantly over-sexualized, and it's absurd. Anyways, Christie comes home from an outing with her older bitch boyfriend and the dolls attack.
Now it's our turn to play with you. Let's see if her head comes off.
I had no idea that Christina Ricci and Sarah Michelle Gellar were the voice of the dolls until I watched for the first time in a long ass time and was like, yes, I'm going to do this movie. And I don't think I was ever cognizant of the fact that they do the voices for these dolls. And it's just so good that I adore that fact. So the commandos projectile launch a VHS tape into Alan's room through a window.
What? What do you see? Ocula, you all right? You'll be okay. Surrender. Smile, girl.
Alan, I am safe. I have not been harmed.
Christy?
I'm making the statement of my own free will and under no duress. Yeah, right.
Stick to the scalpel! Treat it like we wrote it. Make it snappy.
I will be released safely and unharmed only if the following conditions are met. 1. Surrender the Gorgonite scum.
Oh,
that's it.
Masterfully, thank you.
Alan, please, you have to help.
Come here, get those tears.
Stop. What else is on? Major Chip Hazard wants a war. We'll give him a war.
Yes, this is a hostage tape of Christie. So Alan hatches a plan. He puts a cardboard box labeled Gorgonites as a decoy on Christie's front lawn, and then he uses a toy rocket to launch Archer inside the house by way of the chimney, where Archer comes downstairs and unlocks the back door to let Alan in. Alan goes upstairs. Her parents are still passed the fuck out, and he finds Christie. She's got tape over her mouth, so she's trying to tell him, bitch, we in danger. But the dolls attack. Anyways, she does get out of her binds as the dolls are attacking Alan, and she starts smashing them with a twirl baton. Christy is so fucking invigorated, she kisses Alan twice.
Watch out, girl! Pissy fit! You're to die for! Run! She got a baton! It's a baton death march! She's gone postal!
I Meanwhile, outside, the commanders figure out that the box is a decoy, so they start to counterattack. Alan and Christy book it away from the house on this Vespa bike thing. I swear to God, it's a fucking Vespa. I don't know. And a race to the death ensues, and they think they've defeated the commandos, but of course, they have not. All right, we are reaching the end of this movie, but I just want to note real quick before I keep going, there's a lot of action scenes in this last part of the movie, and it's just too much for me to explain, so I am very, very summarizing here. Of course, I always recommend go watch the movie. It's just much better. These scenes specifically, it's much better than, you know, my verbal recitation, but I'm gonna do my best to make it fun. So Globotech is now pulling the toys. The commando elite and the Gorgonites. Erwin's like, yeah, this isn't gonna fucking work, and they pull the plug. So Joe is out at one of the other bigger toy stores in the town that he was supposed to be dropping all of his shipment off to, you know, but he ended up making that deal with Alan, so obviously that didn't happen. So he's picking them back up from this bigger toy store when the commandos kidnap Joe at tiny knife point.
Greetings, you've been trapped.
Back at Alan's house, Phil thinks Alan is the one doing all of this.
Is this entire household insane? He says that toy is alive just because it can move a little. What's next? The blue fairy drops by with a talking cricket, please.
Dad, he's telling the truth.
He's brainwashed you, hasn't he? Don't worry, honey. We'll get you the best deprogrammer money can buy.
You can't change programming.
Okay, but as the Gorgonites come out of their hiding and Phil's like, what the actual fuck is happening? The science toy guys show up.
Hi, we're with the Heartland Play Systems, Consumer Satisfaction. Is there an Alan Abernathy here?
That's Alan right there.
Hey, how you doing? I understand you recently acquired some of our play products.
There's a chance that they might be, defective.
Although there's no reason to believe they could cause anybody any harm.
Oh, there's reasons. There's a problem with the commandos.
Really? What kind of problem? Bear in mind, you will be called into court to substantiate your claim.
Essentially, Larry gets punched out because he's still trying to deny anything that's happened. And Stuart is big pissed because, you know, he went from thinking Alan was full of shit and stealing his tools and his mom thinking that Alan's on crank to Alan being proven right. And now Stuart is like big fucking pissed at this guy for putting this chip in this fucking toys and, you know, essentially brewing all of this to happen. And Larry's standing there really like, choose your words carefully because this will be litigated in a courtroom. And so Stu just punches him. He just punches him. High five, Stu. I like this for you. Love that journey for you. Then Erwin loses his toy-loving creative mind over the Gorgonites because he sees the Gorgonites and he's just like, holy shit, this is so cool. And he's discovering them in the moment outside of his brain. And it's kind of great, but fleeting because the commandos are attacking still. Okay, the shit's going down. The commandos commandeer Joe's truck to get more troops and attack again. So yeah, Phil is finally fully believing that, yes, this absurd thing is actually happening. He makes a sort of white flag and goes to talk to the commandos who are having none of it.
Hi. I'm Phil Fimple. I'm here to negotiate the surrender of the Gorgonzolas. Now here's our proposal.
Hey!
Take them!
He's selling us down the river. The guy's a regular Arnold Benedict.
I mean, switch them off, take them apart, steal their batteries, whatever it is you people do. Hey. Is that my JVC?
There will be no surrender. There will be no mercy. All Gorgonite scum must die.
It doesn't go well at all. And the commandos launch a full-on attack. Chaos ensues. Pure toy chaos.
We are the commando elite. Everything else is just a toy.
Yo, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want.
Psychological warfare.
The Marines did this against Noriega.
Phil!
Phil!
What?
I love this song!
Alan's mom, this is where she takes charge, and I'm like, Alan's mom is a fucking badass, because she just starts directing orders and taking charge in this situation where there's dolls who have used all of the shit in Phil's garage, who is really into tech things, to craft all of these different weapons of war. And now they're launching fireballs through the front window that they've smashed. So she starts playing tennis with the fireball things that the commandos are launching through the living room window that they shattered, counterattacking. As this is all happening, they figure out and decide that they need a huge-ass electromagnetic pulse to fry the X-1000 chips.
Nuclear warhead? What are you talking about?
It's the chips. They're not shielded against an electromagnetic pulse. A nuclear blast would wipe them out.
That's why the military never used them.
Well, what kind of moron would put military technology in toys?
Oh, that'd be Gizmo over here.
Archer points out the power pole that he's seen outside of Alan's window that has two big transformers on it.
There's a power pole back there with a couple of huge transformers on it. Could we use those to create a big enough electromagnetic whatever?
Yeah. We could get them to explode.
Yeah, that would fry the chip for sure.
So they're like, okay, now this plan is coming together. I think we're going to be able to do this. We just got to, you know, actually fucking make it happen. Meanwhile, Alan's mom is still being a badass. And then Chip flies in on a toy-sized helicopter.
We have met the enemy, and he is you.
What?
I love the smell of polyurethane in the morning.
Christy and the nerds make a break for her house to turn on all the electricity in Christy's house, since the power is out at Alan's, okay? So they need to make sure that they have a big enough of an electromagnetic current as possible. So Christy's like, guys, I think we need to do this. And the two science tech guys are like, yeah, yep, agreed. And they go with her. Archer has a bit of a speech moment with the Gorgonites, and he's telling them that it's time to stop hiding because they're currently hiding in the kitchen right now. It's kind of cute. But Archer is saying that they must help Alan. They must fight. And so they do. Alan has a moment with Archer before he heads to make a break to the power pole and climb it to connect to the transformers by way of placing a wrench between the two transformers, essentially connecting them should they explode. They share a sort of goodbye because he gets all choked up for a second. He's like, hey, when this blows, your chip is going to fry too. And Archer is very diplomatic and just like, Alan, you must go. So they have a little bit of a moment here, but then Alan quickly runs for the power pole. Chip attacks via, again, the tiny helicopter as Alan is up on this fucking power pole, and he knocks the wrench out of Alan's hands. And now Chip has jumped out of the helicopter and he is attacking Alan. So Archer, he comes to help. And he gets a little fucked up by bitch ass Chip, and he does end up falling to the ground off of, you know, this big ass height of the power pole. And Alan takes Chip's moment of pause when Archer falls to the ground to grab the doll and use him as a connector for the transformers instead of the wrench, which he doesn't have anymore. So, you know, Alan gets knocked to the ground. There's an army of commandos and Frankenstein Wendy dolls coming for him as Christy comes through with a riding lawnmower.
Get on! Is this gonna be a pattern for our relationship?
Relationship?
Is it bad that my first thought when I saw her on this riding lawnmower was, is it Insidious that I'm thinking of? Where one of the horrid deaths is, I think the family's been like buried in the lawn and then the kid killing it. Like, anyways, I couldn't help but see that as this was happening. And so sorry. Anyways, then the transformers blow and the dolls fry. It's the next day. They're trying to clean up. The police are there. The sun is a-shining. And then Mr. Mars, Dennis Leary, comes in on his life-size helicopter and starts handing out massive checks.
Yeah, what about the pain and the anguish and the
humiliation?
The humiliation. I don't think even you have enough money to pay for that. Okay, maybe you do.
Alan finds the Gorgonites alive. The satellite dish, Phil's satellite dish, it had fallen and covered them, and it created this protective satellite dish layer so they didn't fry. Alan ends up taking them to that national park that Archer had found on his computer and was like, Gorgon. And he helps them set sail in that cool ass toy ship from his dad's store.
Hey, look, we're out to launch.
I'm seasick already.
Goodbye, Alan.
Bye-bye, Alan. Nice knowing you.
Why the fuck am I tearing up? The end. The end. That's the end of the movie. I fucking love this movie. I don't have anything else to say about it besides I love this movie. It's hilarious. It's slightly heartfelt at times. It's absurd. The Spice Girls show up with their music. They don't actually show up, but they show up with their music. And listen, if I get a Spice Girls interlude, a bitch be happy. And I just had to point this out. It didn't even occur to me until now. So Phil Hartman, back to Phil. His Groundlings character that he brought to SNL, his kind of main squeeze character that he loved and did a lot, was Detective Chick Hazard. And our lead commando in the movie is Commander Chip Hazard. So I wonder if that was intentional or not. I didn't see anything about that being on purpose from what I was reading, but maybe, you know, or it's just a fucking huge ass coincidence, but I don't know. I mean, you decide for yourself how you feel about it. I think it was intentional and I love it, especially because this ended up being Phil Hartman's last movie.
And this was just a good fun time that I really needed. And I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. I did initially watch this movie on Max, but I also did buy it for, I think, $6 off Amazon. So if you're dying to watch it, you can probably rent it on YouTube, buy it on YouTube, or I'm sure there's other ways. But the way I went, I will look on thrift books for used movies, even on Amazon. If I buy it off something off Amazon, a book or a movie, I don't do it too often, but if I do prefer to buy it used. So if there's used options, I'll do that. But thrift books, this is a really good way to, you know, buy things secondhand, and you can usually find stuff on there for honestly sometimes a better price than on Amazon. But unless it's something that's super rare, it's not usually crazy overpriced. So anyways, shout out to thrift books, I guess. Not sponsored, I've used them for a long time for books and movies. My next episode, I already know what my next episode is going to be. Sometimes I don't because I just flip back and forth a lot, but I'm going to be doing Adam's Family Values, and we're going to learn about the real history of Thanksgiving. Okay, so prepare your brains for that. Be educational. But when it comes to time for the movie, we'll have a fun time, I swear. Keep your eye out for that, my dears. Look for the trailer to that after the outro music. Make sure you subscribe, like, follow wherever you're listening so you can get a cute little notification when my next episode is available. Thanks for sticking around, my creatures. Okay, bye.
Thank you, Alan, destroyer of commandos.
Now we are free.
Free? What about the cover charge?
Yeah. I mean... sleep in a van down by the river.
You know, I can't imagine a more dignified way to end my 8 years on this program. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Gomez.
Caramia.
Marvelous news. I'm going to have a baby. Right now.
Are you in unbearable pain? My darling, is it torture?
Oui.
It's a boy.
It's a girl.
Gomez!
What news?
Father, what is it?
It's an Adams.
Do you think we love the baby more than we love you?
Yes.
These Adams men, where do you find them?
It has to be damned.
We're not shy. We're contagious. I think their whole family's like some weird medical experiment.
Are we late?
There's an episode!
One house, three children. So many windows.
You still desire me after all these years?
Forever.
Our whole family together at last.
Good show.